shoot, they score!
Score!
We have turned the clock, man!
Hit the shot, he scores!
This week in the NHL.
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We got to be focused all 60 minutes.
This week in the NHL.
The most arrogant team he's ever played against.
Do you think that's more of a personnel issue or more of a scheme issue?
He's dominating like the Jets wanted him to do.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve. Now Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Richard Pollock on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening, TSN1290.ca. Good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week, our playoff preview special. 2 hours of hockey talk, getting you set for the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs tomorrow evening. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. We're going to be joined by Eric Duhatchik of the Globe and Mail to go through all of the first round series coming up at the bottom of the hour. But we get started with the St. Louis Blues against the defending Stanley Cup champion Chicago Blackhawks, a series that gets underway tomorrow evening, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. The Blues and the Blackhawks, Rich, as good evening to you both, gentlemen. Is this the year the Chicago Blackhawks are able, the St. Louis Blues are able to get through that first round, get through that bugaboo after having a tremendous regular season and make themselves into legitimate Western Conference contenders? Or is it going to be another year of playoff heartbreak for the Blues, potentially costing Ken Hitchcock his job?
All right. Well, I mean, I thought Ezzy was going to jump in there first.
He was pointing at you.
Yeah, there's a lot of question marks surrounding the Blues, and I think it has more to do with the past, frankly, than it has to do with this season. I think Ken Hitchcock did a marvelous job this year managing the roster with injuries to the likes of Jaden Schwartz, some on the back end. For long periods of time, you had a mishmash of players. And I thought he did a great job keeping the group together. They were able to work in a guy like Colton Parayko on the back end, giving them the depth that they didn't have before. And if you think about the right side of the St. Louis back end, you have Shattenkirk, Pietrangelo, and Parayko. That's a dynamite right side. And they've been happy. You have the reliability in terms of a Bomeister on the left side, and then you have the depth up front, and you think you're pretty healthy here. Backus is skating. Mm-hmm. So you think about the depth up front, and you feel pretty good about it. And then you have the fact that you have the best team save percentage in the National Hockey League this year. So a lot of your stats look good for the most part. In terms of the Blackhawks, I mean, we know about the dynamite team that they have. We know how good their offense is. Patrick Kane and Artemi Panarin. I mean, I know you have Anisimov in the middle, but Panarin and Kane are just dynamic. You know what you're going to get from Taves. To me, Hossa slow down a little bit here, and they're going to need something from Ladd, but they have great depth up front. I have questions about their back end because of Keith being out for game one on the road. The fact that St. Louis has depth and will take advantage of the fact that I think they really only have three dependable defensemen defensively.
The Blackhawks are
saying. I don't trust Van Riems like defensively. Mm-hmm. And the mishmash of other guys. Roosevelt, his game's actually suited towards the Blues just because how physical he is. As you can probably hear the way I'm leaning here, I'm leaning towards the St. Louis upset, quote-unquote, if that's an upset, in seven games. Like I think this is going to be a hard-fought series, but I do think this is the year that St. Louis gets over that hurdle. And you guys, if you listen to the show, I've been critical of the Blues goaltending and questioning it all year.
Right.
And I don't love – I know Brian Elliott had a good year. I don't love Brian Elliott.
Brian Elliott gets the start in game one for the Blues against the Blackhawks.
I don't trust Brian Elliott for that, this goaltending to make a long run. But I think based on the question marks in Chicago, I think these are offset. And I think St. Louis is – depth up front causes too many problems for Chicago's back end, and Crawford's had issues with injury. So I have St. Louis in seven.
Yeah, and Brian Elliott, Richie, had
a very good year, and he finally gets a chance to start, because if you remember, Ryan Miller was acquired by the St. Louis Blues, and Brian Elliott backed up Ryan Miller. Before that, Brian Elliott was backing up Yaroslav Halak. Jake Allen was the number one goalie for the Blues for a lot of the season and was injured towards the end of the season, so he'll be back. And it's possible, if Brian Elliott struggles, that Jake Allen will go in. They have two really good goaltenders. And is it a function of the way the Ken Hitchcock system is played? Sure, I think that's part of it. The Blues have some of the best defensemen in the NHL, whether you're talking about Petrangelo, Bomeister, Shattenkirk. Richie mentions Colton Parayko, who had a great rookie season. I think this series is very difficult to predict. And it's tough to bet against the Chicago Blackhawks because they're the defending Stanley Cup champions. They've won three of the last six Cups and all of that. But the St. Louis Blues, I think, for the first time all year, are healthy. And we mentioned David Backes. He was practicing today. He might play game one. At the very least, he's going to play some substantial time in the first round. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about the Chicago Blackhawks, they're healthy with the exception of Duncan Keith, who's suspended for the first game. And it's only one game. I don't think that's going to have a big factor on the series. You could say that if they lose that game, then that puts them behind the eight ball.
Well, but they lost the first two games to the Blues when they played each other a couple years ago. Then they rattled off four straight wins. So the Blackhawks certainly are a team that you know can play from behind. I mean, it's almost like the Blackhawks sort of have to go in with the mentality that game one, you know, everything is stacked up against them in game one. No Duncan Keith on the road. It's almost like a bit of a... They can almost go into that game with the mentality that they might expect to lose that game.
And the St. Louis Blues are coming in ahead of the Blackhawks in the standings, so they've won eight of their last 10, so they're feeling really good. I still think Chicago offensively is going to be too much for St. Louis to handle, kind of the opposite of what Richie said. And for me, Chicago, you throw in Panarin, who had 75 points, Patrick Kane, career year, and acquiring Andrew Ladd, who's going to play on the top line. A guy like Dale Weiss can't even get into the lineup. So I think Chicago is just going to outscore St. Louis too much. I think it's going to be hard for them, kind of the opposite of what Rich said. So I think this series is also going to go to seven games, and I've got Chicago winning in seven.
Do you have concerns? I mean, for years, the St. Louis Blues have never been able to get that key goal in the playoffs. I mean, they have Tarasenko, who's one of the, you know, if he's not the second best right winger in the game, he's certainly a top five right winger in the game. Do you have concerns about the Blues being able to get that key goal in this series when they haven't been able to get it in seasons past?
I think it's always a concern because it hasn't been done before, but Tarasenko is one of the best goal. He's one of the top five pure goal scorers in the National Hockey League. So, and he's proven how good he can be. Quick as shot is, he can get it off whenever he really wants. So that doesn't overly concern me, Drew. I'd be more concerned about the goaltending than I would be about that.
Ez, how about you? Do you have any concerns on that?
Well, no, I don't. I mean, St. Louis is an excellent team. 4 points separate these two teams. And, you know, Richie mentioned Vladimir Tarasenko, who, with the exception of a few players, probably is the best right winger in the NHL. Patrick Kane is obviously the top right winger in the game right now. But when you look at the St. Louis Blues, a guy like Robbie Fabry's had an excellent season, and they haven't been healthy all season. You know, Richie mentioned Jaden Schwartz and Patrick Berglund missed big parts of the season this year. Shattenkirk had a bit of an injury there. So you got to give the coaching staff a lot of credit. But this series is ultimately going to come down to, an overtime goal, something like that. Two very, very evenly matched teams, and you could maybe give one team the advantage. I would give Chicago the advantage that's forward, but I would say St. Louis as a group has top six is probably better than Chicago's top six, even though I would say Duncan Keith is the best defenseman.
You're talking about defense there.
Right. And
but there are some rumblings that Keith might not be fully healthy either. That's another thing.
Right, but I'll probably take a Keith at 75% over most of the defensemen in the NHL, Rich. But then when you get into the bottom six, probably either Michael Roosevelt or Svedberg's coming out when Duncan Keith is back. And we know that Keith and Jarmerson and Seabrook, they played a lot of minutes in the Cup run last year. And, you know, it's going to come down to, I mean, again, it's probably going to be a seven-game series. I mean, there isn't going to be an upset here. If St. Louis wins, they finally get the monkey off of their back, right? Because they've been knocked out of the first round in the last 3 years. And if Chicago upsets St. Louis, it's not really an upset.
Sure.
Because they were the second best team in the Central Division. So it's going to be an unbelievable series. I mean, you've got eight really good first-round series, Drew. This is probably one of the ones fans are going to look forward to the most, just because you got the defending Stanley Cup champions against a Blues team that basically has Ken Hitchcock's job on the line.
Two quick things before break. St. Louis far better at faceoffs than Chicago, and far better on the penalty kill than Chicago during the season.
Coverage of
Davis is a pretty good face-off guy.
Coverage of the Blues and the Blackhawks is at 8 p.m. tomorrow night here on TSN 1290. When we come back, we're going to preview the Stars and the Wild. You're listening to NHL This Week. It's our playoff preview show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to TSN 1290. This is NHL This Week with Illegal Curve Hockey. And this segment is brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information about the Linden Market Dental Center, visit lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, we spoke about the Blues and the Blackhawks series. We continue looking at the Central Division. The Western Conference champion Dallas Stars match up against the number 8 seed Minnesota Wild. The first time ever that the old Stars and the new Stars have ever met in the playoffs. Bad news, significantly bad news for the Minnesota Wild, with the announcement earlier today that they are expecting to be without Zach Parise for the foreseeable future. Yeah. He's got a back injury. He's been playing through a back injury all year. But in the last week of the season, the injury has flared up. He's gone to the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, for additional, you know, diagnostic work. Does not sound like he's going to be in the Minnesota Wild lineup anytime in the near future. Is that a deal breaker in your mind, that the Minnesota Wild minus Zach Parise are not going to be able to slow down the juggernaut offense of the Dallas Stars?
I mean, I don't think it's a deal breaker, because I didn't think they were gonna win anyways, Drew. I mean, if you look at the matchups here, which is what I do, kind of when taking a look at this series, and how is Minnesota's forward group, which I don't think is particularly fast. I mean, some fast players, but to me, it's a slower group and not a very physical group. So what is Dallas's defense? A mobile puck moving defense. Dallas's defense would have trouble with a quick and or physical team. I don't think Minnesota's particularly either of those. So I think Dallas's defense have more time to move the puck over and up to. They're very capable forwards. And I think if Dallas is able to get that transition game going, they're as good as any in terms of moving the puck and creating offense. Their numbers are great. You watch them, they're exciting to watch. They take chances, but they have the skill to be able to do that. Sure, there are questions in goal that may very well rear their ugly head. I don't know if it'll be in this series or maybe a time or two that some panic will hit the Dallas Stars fan base and management and players. But this year they have the ability to go to another goaltender with some, you know, with a trustworthy resume. And when you have Niemi and you have Lehtinen, Niemi, you know a guy's won a cup before, and Lehtinen, you know a guy is extremely talented. Maybe pressure has affected him, as Mike Hajka told us before on the show, but you have two alternatives, and to me, you're playing against an inferior squad. So I have Dallas winning this series. I actually have a sweep.
You have a sweep.
Rare in this day and age. Usually it's five games, but yeah.
Yeah, and you have a situation here, guys, where the Minnesota Wild are the eighth seed for the third year in a row. And 2 years ago, they knocked off the Colorado Avalanche, who won the division. Last year, they knocked off the St. Louis Blues. Well, they might have been seven.
Yeah, I was thinking the Jets were eight. The Jets were eight last year. The Wild were seven. But they were the wild card team for the third straight year.
Right, they're a wild card team for the third straight year. And you think maybe they have it in them to knock off the Dallas Stars. And the only knock against the Dallas Stars would be that their defense is not a top defense in the Western Conference, let alone their own division. And it's been better with the acquisition of Johnny Oduya. And I think acquiring a guy like Chris Russell, more of a defensive defenseman, has also helped. When you look at this series, though, you can't get over the fact that not only are the Wild without Zach Parise, Drew, who is their top scorer, and that's going to be a huge loss. He's their number one left winger, one of their leaders, and all of that. It's that the Minnesota Wild have been so inconsistent this year, and that starts with their forward group and continues with their defense. And I like how they've brought in Mike Riley towards the end of the year because they were too slow. Ryan Suter quietly had his best offensive season. I think he should be getting more attention for the Norris Trophy. Still one of the top defensemen in my mind. and it's still a great group. Marco Scandella has been moved to play alongside Jonas Brodin. Spurgeon's playing with Ryan Suter. It's still a very good group defensively. This team doesn't score enough goals. 22 points separates these two teams. Dallas, whatever metric you want to use, great power play, good penalty kill, good possession team, best offensive team in the NHL, with the exception of the Washington Capitals. So everything is stacked up against the Minnesota Wild. And to boot, after Mike Yeo was fired, they didn't really light it up under John Torchetti. I believe they were 15-11-4 under John Torchetti. Devin Dubnyk has still had a decent season, maybe not as good as last year, but I just think this Dallas Stars team is too good offensively. They've gotten better defensively, and the Minnesota Wild aren't going to be able to overcome the loss of Parise, and it's just not going to be a series that I see them taking very far. So I don't have a sweep, but I've got Dallas winning this series in six.
Dallas in six for Ezzie to match Richards Dallas in four. Is this the best matchup, first round matchup, that the Stars could have asked for? I mean,
they're playing the worst team in the eight, I think. So yes.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like everything that the Stars, you know, don't do well, defend, namely the Wild don't really score very much. So it seems like it works well for them.
It's also the way they score. I mean, I think the matchup does work well for Dallas. I mean, Dallas is very hard to defend, Drew. I don't think anybody is going to have an easy time. I mean, if Dallas is successful in winning the series, I don't think they'll have the St. Louis or Chicago have an easy time defending Dallas.
No, they have that much offensive talent. And, you know, what Dallas has to worry about is the health of Tyler Seguin, who yes. was skating. That's not yet known, A, how healthy he actually is. I have trouble believing that he can come back from a partial tear of his Achilles and be the same Tyler Seguin, you know, he was in the middle of the year.
I have no clue.
I have no clue either. I mean, it just seems logical to me that a guy with an injury of that nature, where it's if it's a little bit more serious, he's out for the season, he can be at the same effectiveness. But that's not to say, you know, like as he said about Duncan Keith, you know, 75% of Duncan Keith, 75% of Tyler Seguin is a pretty good percentage mm-hmm. to have up out there. It just seems like the Wild, I think they're gonna have to spend so much effort to keep the puck out of their own zone and out of their own net. It's going to be hard for them to get enough offense to match Dallas.
Well, to your point, Seguin is probably going to be back for game one. It's not confirmed yet. At the very least, he'll probably be in there for game two or game three. Mm-hmm. So they're going to put Seguin back on the top line with Jamie Benn. Cody Eakin will move back to his normal spot on the third line center. And then Minnesota, when you're talking about Brodin and Scandella, are going to have to shut down Spezza's line. Spezza has had an excellent season.
He has.
Playing alongside Nichushkin and Patrick Eves right now. And then your third line, previously mentioned, is probably going to be a combination of Eakin, Roussel, Alish Hemsky. There's a lot of depth there, Drew. It's going to be tough for the Riley and Dumba pairing, I think, once they're matched up against that line. It's a very good line. And as we mentioned, I mean, you have a third pairing for Dallas of Chris Russell and Jason Demers, which is I'll take that third pairing any day of the week.
Yeah, their defense is, people talk about, I mean, it's not the most defensively inclined physical group, but they're all puck movers.
They work with what the team does best. You know, they're not trying to pound a square defenseman into a round hole. Mm-hmm. They're looking to get puck movers up to their forwards, and that's what they can do. So, yeah, they can't defend that well in their own zone necessarily.
I mean, it's not like they're terrible.
No, they're not atrocious.
Just, you know, you're not talking about Chalmerson kind of thing.
Yeah, they're not atrocious, but they play to the strengths of the team, which makes a good sense for how you'd want to build your defense.
We should mention that Antti Niemi and Kari Lehtinen didn't have the best regular season.
They
split
yeah.
the games,
yeah,
right. And it looks like Lehtinen's going to start game one. But again, I think when a team is scoring four or five goals in the playoffs, it doesn't matter. I think it's the Grant Fuhr type of scenario. I don't think these two goalies are going to have to stand on their heads. This Dallas Stars team is a quick strike offensive team, and they can hurt you from three scoring lines, I think. You know, we just mentioned Cody Eakin's been playing on the top line. He yeah. bumps down to the third line. Patrick Sharp and Johnny Oduya, two guys that won the Cup last year. Now they have the Cup experience because they were lacking that. Throw in a Chris Russell. I mean, Jim Nill's done an awesome job. This
yeah,
team
yeah.
was built for the playoffs, and I think Minnesota's going to have a lot of matchup issues, Richie. And even though I want to pick Minnesota, before the season started, my Stanley Cup pick was Minnesota versus Tampa Bay, and I'm not taking either of those teams in the first round because I just can't with the injuries. Parise, Stamkos, Hedman, Strawman. So I think Minnesota, they'll be lucky to get to six games.
Yeah, and Dallas hasn't been here before in terms of in this favorite position. But, I mean, Hemsky's been to the finals with Edmonton. Niemi won the Cup with San Jose.
No, with Chicago.
Chicago. Yeah. Oduya's won the cup. You have
Sharp.
You have Sharp, who's obviously, you mentioned, won the cup. Spezza went to the final with Ottawa. Mm-hmm. Guys like Moen have been in, and I think Moen, what, did he win it with Anaheim? I don't recall. But I mean, all these guys have played in the playoffs before. They all have playoff experience. So that wouldn't really concern me in terms of Dallas kind of being a group of players with so many moves kind of newly put together over the past couple of seasons, not having played together for 5, 6, 7.
Sure.
Kind of like a St. Louis who's really played together for a long period of time.
Is that Moen on a line with Robbie Niedermeyer? I think that was the line.
It was Paulson, Niedermeyer, and...
I thought it was Moen.
You're talking about the Ducks Cup win a number of years back?
2007.
Yeah.
Was it Paulson, Niedermeyer, and Moen? It was Paulson, Niedermeyer, Rob Niedermeyer, not Scott.
Yeah. Well, Scott was on the back end.
I'm trying to remember. Yeah. Anyhow.
Anyways, if the Stars, if the Wild get into penalty trouble, there's also a huge matchup advantage there for the Stars. They had the 5th-ranked power play in the league. The Wild had the 27th-ranked power play. So the Wild take penalties against the Stars at their own peril. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to bring you Eric DeHatchick's interview that he conducted earlier with Richard Pollock. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. It's our playoff preview show. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Earlier today, my colleague Richard Pollock had the opportunity to sit down with Eric DeHatchick of the Globe and Mail to have a significant and in-depth conversation about the NHL playoffs, which start tomorrow evening. Here is Richard Pollock with Eric DeHatchick.
Eric, we're here to have you for the usual playoff preview show, and we figured this year we'd have you on to talk about both conferences, not just one. And so we'll start in the Eastern Conference with the Washington Capitals, the number one seed. Pretty dominant season by the Capitals, Eric, lined up against the Philadelphia Flyers, who obviously made a late run in the second half of the season, and of course the sad news about the passing of Ed Snyder. How do you see that series working out?
Well, I've got Washington picked to win the Stanley Cup, so obviously I'm going to pick them over the Flyers, and it's going to be, the best team doesn't always win. We know that. You know, that's the history of the National Hockey League playoffs. But I just see a Washington team. I'm focusing strictly on them, and I would say this no matter who they were playing. I see a team with no real weaknesses right now. Now, I mean, injuries can happen, and I think that if they were to lose Braden Holtby, there's a significant drop-off to Philip Grubauer, and all bets would be off then if they didn't have him as the starting goaltender. But Holtby gives them, one of the top three or four goaltending options in the playoffs. Their 1-6 defense core is terrific. The Niskanen has had a terrific year. John Carlson has been very good since he's come back from injury. I mean, they have 7 top six forwards as far as I'm concerned, and there are times when TJ Oshie isn't playing in the top six. There are times when Marcus Johansson isn't playing in the top six. I think the biggest thing that happened this year with the addition of Oshie and Williams is it took some of the pressure to score off of Ovechkin. You know, people always want to reference that, a few years ago when Washington won the President's Trophy and then faltered in the first round, that was largely because of that great goaltending performance by Yaroslav Halak. But if you remember, Richard, what Ovechkin was like in that series when things didn't start to go well for him. He went all lone wolf. That was the characteristic of Alex Ovechkin in his first couple of years. You know, he felt he had to put the team on his back and do it by himself. And in a team game, that never works, right? So now I see a team that has, the development of Kuznetsov. In the second half, Burakovsky's been really good. Mm-hmm. Williams has won in the past. Oshie is a dynamic player. Nicholas Backstrom is one of the best playmakers in the game. They're just isn't the urgency. The Washington Capitals can win games now on nights when Alex Ovechkin doesn't score. And I think that's a tremendous relief for him. So, people focus on the fact that he's become this much better two-way player under Barry Trotz, and that is absolutely true. But I just think that if it gets to the point where the series is 2-2, I don't think you're going to see Ovechkin play as an individual the way he has in past playoff failures. I think, they have learned to play play the system in Washington. They have confidence in themselves. They've had terrible starts all year, mm-hmm. and they've been real good in the second and third period. That tells me there's a team with a level of composure that is willing to, the coaches always talk about sticking to the process. They believe that. Those are not just empty words. So I just think that they have the patience, they have the experience, they've got a great coach, they've got a great goaltender. I just don't see, bad luck sometimes enters into the equation, but all things being equal, they are the best team in the National Hockey League. Their record proves it, and it's a two-month marathon, but they just have their pieces are just so much better than anyone else's in the East that I see them not having too much trouble getting to the Eastern Conference Final.
And I agree with you. We're joined by Eric DeHatrick of the Globe and Mail talking about the playoffs starting on Wednesday. Eric, one of the perks of the format now, this bracket format that the NHL has, is you can kind of foresee what that second round matchup may be, and a lot of people are picking and are looking forward to, and they still have to play the first round, but the Pittsburgh Penguins and Washington Capitals, if the Pittsburgh Penguins are able to get through the Rangers. And you look at the Penguins and the team you watch in the first half of the year with Mike Johnson look pretty disinterested, and boy, I mean, a kind of a lack of maybe the style of game that they were employing didn't fit the players that they had, and a certain motivation was lacking. But that team has been on fire recently and playing against a New York Rangers team that can't really seem to put it all together right now. How do you see that series working out?
You know, it's really interesting because a year ago, just the opposite things were being said. You know, the Rangers were the heavy favorites in the series, mm-hmm. and everyone thought that Pittsburgh had no chance, and it ended up going, pretty easily in New York's way. So, 12 months later, what's different? Well, Malkin was hurt last year, he's hurt again this year. They've made some changes, but essentially Henrik Lundqvist is still there. The Rangers have actually added Eric Staal. I think that their personnel up front are better. Obviously, the Ryan McDonagh injury is going to be a factor in the thing, but I don't think that the gap between the two teams is as great as people seem to think it is, and people are putting a lot of weight on the fact that Pittsburgh was so good down the stretch. Mm-hmm. So I'm picking Pittsburgh, but I think the Rangers are going to make them work a lot harder than people think in order to win the thing. And I think there's still a chance for an upset there. I'm not prepared to write the Rangers off. The one thing that I like about them is they do have a playoff pedigree, mm-hmm. and they have they have no questions in goal. I mean, Pittsburgh, you've got questions about Fleury, you've got questions about Murray. Will their goaltending hold up through the first through seven games of the series? I think that that's something that we won't know the answer to until they drop the puck and away we go. So, yes, I mean, I love the way Pittsburgh has played lately, and I think that, the style, first of all, forget wins and losses. I just like the style of hockey that they play. The idea of putting, Bonino with Hagelin and Kessel, Kessel and Hagelin, two of the top five skaters in the league? That's just that's a speed of sound line, and so they're an attractive team to watch, and I think that that's why people want to cheer for them. We've been making a big deal of the fact that none of the seven Canadian teams are in the playoffs. I think there are people that are going to adopt the Pittsburgh Penguins as their team because of Sidney Crosby and because they're just they're a fun team to watch. But I see a close series there, and depending on what point McDonagh can get back, if he can get back, I'm led to believe that at some point he will play in the first round. I think that'll go the distance. And, in a game seven, who knows what will happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And you look over the other borough, Eric, and we're joined by Eric DeHatrick of the Globe and Mail. Look over the other borough in Brooklyn, and you mentioned the Ryan McDonagh injury. The Florida Panthers-Islanders series, to me, kind of hinges, in part, on two injuries here. Vincent Trocheck, who's been tremendous for the mm-hmm. Panthers, especially leading kind of the secondary scoring, along with guys like Riley Smith, and then the Islanders with Travis Hamonic. And you saw what happened last year against Washington when they just weren't able to defend really past that top pairing and had to overwork Boychuk and Letty. How do you see this series working out?
Yeah, I focus on the goaltending as much as anything else. I like Roberto Luongo, 37 years old now, but he's, he got to a Stanley Cup final with Vancouver, won Olympic gold for Canada, has the right personality to play goal in the playoffs. And then Halak, I don't believe is going to be ready for the start. Who knows if he will play, and if he does play, what kind of shape he'll be in. Thomas Greiss at different times this year played very well for the Islanders, and there were times when when teams lit him up. So I think there's a significant advantage in goal on the Florida side. The Islanders have made the playoffs, a couple of times in the last few years, and it's hard to bet against John Tavares because he was really good in his last handful of games there. And, I think he's a guy that is hungering for playoff success. I just think that Florida has more. I think they just have, with the moves to add the depth up front and Hudler and Purcell, they can run three scoring lines pretty deep. And if Trocheck comes back at some point late in the first round, which I guess is a possibility, I like the way they set up. That to me is you were talking about brackets earlier. That to me is the weakest bracket.
Yes, yeah.
And I think that Florida has a chance to win a couple of rounds there just because it is the weakest bracket. And I just don't think the Islanders have enough to match up with Florida's firepower right now.
You mentioned that bracket in the last series, and the one that maybe leaves me the least inspired in terms of wanting to turn it on and watch this series, but it is the Tampa Bay Lightning and Detroit Red Wings. And obviously the Lightning, Eric, you have the injuries and kind of the distractions all year. Things like, a poor power play that they had, and obviously the Steven Stamkos, and the little things that they seem to be so good at, they aren't as good at this year as they were last year. And then you have the Detroit Red Wings, who kind of, backed a little bit into the playoffs in terms of their overall performance this year. And you watch the team, and there still is a lot of skill up front. I think their back end, personally, is lacking a little bit, and there has been goaltending questions. Is there a particular team you think has the advantage here?
No, I don't. I have a coin, and flipped it, it came up Detroit. Yeah. But I have no conviction on this series, as opposed to other series where I have, fairly strong view.
Yeah.
This is one that I can't get a handle. I mean, Tyler Johnson, is he healthy? He's out skating today.
Right.
Does he play? That changes the dynamic a little bit. If you have to go into that without Stamkos and Johnson, you're basically down to Brian Boyle and Cedric Paquette. That's just not enough. Not against the Detroit team that has Pavel Datsyuk and Henrik Zetterberg and Dylan Larkin, and Nyquist didn't have a great year, but there's an opportunity for him and Tatar to make some hay in the playoffs after just so regular season. So I think Detroit has a little bit more than Tampa right now. If we were comparing the two teams with all hands on deck, I would pick Tampa without a question, but that is not the case, and the absences in Tampa are enormous. Those are deeply felt. I think that the Strollmans and the Stamkoses of the world, you can put bodies in the lineup, but you don't replace what they do, and you can get by for a few games here and there without them, but you're talking about trying to make a deep playoff run, and it is a challenging thing to do when you lose key players like that.
Moving over to the Western Conference, Eric, and I think every series is intriguing in some way. Start with Dallas, Minnesota. Sure, you have the storyline of Dallas playing this in the city that they used to play in, but in reality, to me, it's the progress of the Dallas Stars and the style of play they're playing against the Minnesota Wild team that's been unpredictable. John Torchetti, comes in. They play well. They play poorly. They're backing into the playoffs here. And you have the Dallas Stars with the wild card being Tyler Seguin and whether or not he's going to be healthy. Just in a bigger level. And you talked about Pittsburgh's style of play. I feel the same way about the Dallas Stars. And you have the back end with Russell and Demers and Klingberg and Odia, all guys who can move the puck. Offensive players who try and make plays. Does the goaltending concern you? I'm going to assume probably that you think Dallas is going to win this series, and I want to hear your take, obviously, but does the goaltending concern you going forward?
Well, I am picking Dallas. I really like their team. In fact, I think Dallas has a chance to win two rounds this year, depending on who emerges from the St. Louis-Chicago series. But, Dallas's goaltending at different times has been really mediocre, and at other times has been good enough. And I'm not 100% sure. Niemi obviously played the last game, when Dallas needed to win in order to clinch the division. So they start with him and have Letton in there. I think we're going to see both at different times in the playoffs. I don't think they're going to vary too much from what they did, moving back and forth, going with the hot hand. Letton was better in the final third of the season, and I think the whole point of bringing Niemi in, I remember Jimmy Neal told me, was was that they just felt that Lettinen was going to be a better goaltender if he played fewer games. And he did, and his numbers were not too bad. So I think their goaltending is good enough. There are times when you want exceptional goaltending, especially if you're a team that you know, that is undermanned on defense and up front. But I think Dallas, you know, as you pointed out, has, you know, lots of weapons up front. I think that they can score a lot of goals. I mean, Patrick Sharp, I think, helps. I think Johnny Oduya helps with the playoff experience. You know, Alex Hemsky in the second half looked pretty good to me. You know, there, and there are players that didn't have great years, like Nikushkin, who can salvage something from the year by having a better playoff. So I just think I like the way Dallas plays, and I think that, you know, Lindy Ruff has done an exceptional job of coaching that team. And when they hit that flat spot, I think it was in January after a very good start, you know, he managed to get them back on track. And I think you know, a sign of how well coached they are is how when they lost Sagan, they didn't miss a beat. You know, there are some teams when they lose a player of that caliber, you know, automatically it changes everything and the bottom falls out from them. But both Pittsburgh after losing Malkin and Dallas after losing Sagan didn't really miss a beat at all. And so that to me speaks of coaching and depth too. You know, the idea that you can have somebody step up and fill in and really not lose very much at all. So I like Dallas and I'm picking them in the series. And, you know, you referenced Minnesota. They've had a troubling kind of a year, and I guess, you know, the message from John Torchetti is going to be, you know, if our poor finish, everything that happened in the first half before I got here, all of that will be forgotten if we can manage to win a round here in the playoffs. So let's just, you know, clean the slate and forget about what happened and see where we go. And you know, Minnesota will be the one team in this playoff that was like Toronto down the stretch, Winnipeg down the stretch, Calgary down the stretch. You know, if you play without any expectations and you can just go out there and go, you know, there is something, you know, there's a relief in that. So that's the one thing that worries me, I guess, a little bit about a team like Minnesota. They have nothing to lose. You know, they have nothing to lose. They're the lowest playoff seed. They had 87 points. Last year, 87 points would have, I think, been 11th or 12th in the conference. There were, you know, there were three 90-point teams and an 89-point team that didn't make the playoffs last year. This year, 87 gets in the West. So that's not a very good year, especially by the standard that the Central Division usually establishes in the NHL. So with nothing to lose, you know, it may well be that, you know, playing pressure-free will change their dynamic a little bit. But Dallas is just flat-out better, so that's who I'm taking.
I agree with you there. And you look at the other matchup in the Central Division, and I think everybody's looking forward to this matchup, Eric. It's St. Louis Blues against Chicago Blackhawks. And look at the job, to me, that Ken Hitchcock did this year with all the injuries and the distraction about him possibly not returning. That team, you know, if you look at things, maybe as a quick aside, I'd ask you about this. That team did kind of all the coachable things really well. And do you think he's maybe not getting enough credit this year for the job he did?
Yeah, I actually haven't seen too many people assessing his work. I think your point is a good one, that he did an exceptional job. I mean, you're talking about, you know, losing Jaden Schwartz for a big chunk of the year, losing Paul Stastny for a big chunk of the year, you know, moving people in and out and in and out. Yes, you know, and it looks to me like they're close to being healthy right now too.
Yeah.
So that's the other scary part about St. Louis. They're a funny team because I think that, you know, even internally, you know, they think that this is their best chance. Part of it has to do with the fact that that some of the younger players like the Tarasenkos and the Schwartzes have kind of been integrated into the leadership group a little bit more. So, you know, rather than just sort of being the newbies, you know, who are kind of there, you know, now they've kind of taken ownership of the winning and the losing in the dressing room. There's a maturity, I would say, among those guys, and you know their defense is just better now that they've got Parayko and Joel Edmonds in there to go with, you know, the three studs that they have had for a handful of years. So, you know, there's not a lot of weaknesses there. People will point to the goaltending of Brian Elliott. He had a very good year. And, you know, in Chicago, you know, Corey Crawford is a terrific underrated goaltender, but he missed a big part of the final portion of the season, got into the final game, didn't look great, probably is going to need a few games to get sharp again. And, you know, the problem with, you know, playing a team like St. Louis is that, you know, you lose four games, you're out.
Yeah.
So I think there are some, you know, legitimate concerns about Chicago. But, again, I look at their personnel, you know, compared to 12 months ago. You know, look at, you know, for example, Patrick Kane's line mates. You know, significant upgrade this year compared to last year. I mean, last year it was Brad Richards and Chris Versteeg. This year it's Anisimov and Panarin. I mean, that's significant. Now, is Hossa healthy? Is Shaw healthy? They won't have Keith until the second game, but he'll be refreshed from that suspension. I don't know. It, to me, there's just so many different variables there that it's really hard to separate them in my mind. I mean, I'm going to pick Chicago, but that's a cheap, easy pick just because they've done it in the past. You know, St. Louis is fully capable of winning that series.
You know, on that Chicago point quickly, we're not going to have you on after every series, Eric, although we'd love to. Do you have concerns? You know, talk about the defense and not having Keith for the first game, but, you know, after that top three in Chicago, not top four, there is a drop-off here. Do you have concerns long-term, you know, making a long run with this team?
Well, they absolutely have to stay healthy. I mean, I love... Mm-hmm. You know, Keith and Seabrook, obviously. Chalmerson, got to be one of the most underrated defensemen in the game. And Joel yes. Quenneville really likes Trevor Van Riemsdyk, you know. And the more I see him, the more I see what he likes about him. You know, there's an awful lot of defensemen that have gone through Chicago and just haven't been able to fit in. You know, Trevor Daly's there for like 5 minutes and then he's gone. Rundblad there for 5 minutes, gone. They just, you know, they just don't fit for whatever reason. And, you know, and yet Van Riemsdyk is a guy that he likes. And Roosevelt is another player that, you know, when he's healthy, out of the 5-6 slot, he's pretty useful. But you're right, they're vulnerable in the sense that, you know, if you without those top two guys, it can really fall off. I think starting on the road probably helps them a little bit, because I think the attitude going into the first game in St. Louis is, we don't have Duncan Keith, we're trying to get our goalie up to speed. You know, if we steal this one, it's a bonus. If not, we haven't lost a game at home yet. So in a lot of ways, starting away suits Chicago. And people probably remember, but, you know, Chicago was the 3 seed in the Central last year when they won, too. So it didn't hurt them last year. It probably isn't going to hurt them again this year.
Anaheim and Nashville, an interesting series. I mean, they're all interesting, especially in the West, Eric. Yeah. But, you know, look at the Western Conference. To me, that's my upset pick, the Nashville Predators. Mm-hmm. And I kind of base it on, you and I talk about it, you know, before the season, and especially in the playoff previews show, is matchups. And I look at the Getzlaf Perry up against Weber and Josi, and I see some matchups in terms of Nashville the other way too that I like, with Johansson now changing the look. Mm-hmm. I think it's a coin flip series, but I'm going with Nashville. Do you think that this is, you know, Anaheim has gone each year, they've gone to game seven and they've advanced around and then lost, so first, second, third round. Mm-hmm. Do you think that it's their year to take the next step, or is Nashville going to be a big impediment?
I'd feel a lot better if they were completely healthy. You know, they had so many injuries down the stretch. You know, Perron, Raquel, Vatanen, Bieksa, Peary, Stoner, Holzer, Kessler. You know, if they had their entire team there, I think that they would be, you know, fairly heavily favored. But I think that they are going to have to work some things out in the first week, and so that to me is the one issue. I see them a lot. I'm in California a fair bit. And the one thing that has impressed me about Anaheim this year is how well the Ryan Kessler, Andrew Cogliano, and Jacob Silverberg mm-hmm. line has played. They've been together for a while. They've been in the shutdown lounge for a while. This year, Silverberg scored 20. Kessler, in the, you know, once everything got going in Anaheim, once the offense got rolling, you know, he became a very good offensive player too. And when they when Raquel was in the lineup there, and when they split up Getzlaf and Perry, and Raquel and Perry were playing together, and Getzlaf and Perron were playing together, they had balance that they didn't have before. So it'll be interesting to see. I think Perron is supposed to play at some point in this round, and I think that ultimately that's what they want to do. You know, if they can get if they can split up Getzlaf and Perry, to your point, you know, that will create matchup issues for Nashville. I mean, they have a great first pair and a very underrated second pair, yeah. Right? Ekholm and Ellis are solid, and then it drops off a little bit there because obviously they had to trade Seth Jones to get Ryan Johansson. So I think that the matchups are a big part of it. I think you're going to see a lot of cat and mouse between the two respective coaches there, but to me it will hinge on who is in the lineup for Anaheim that first night. I think the fact that they're not starting until Friday means that some of these guys, like Perron, like Raquel, like that, and then we'll have a little bit of extra time to heal. And so I think that there's a better chance that they will have a full lineup for Friday. And if they do have a full lineup, then I think that they could potentially create matchup issues for the Predators as well.
And that matchup wasn't set until the final day of the season, when Anaheim did beat the Washington Capitals. And Eric, you mentioned that Kessler-Silverberg combination. Jets fans will certainly remember that combination hurting the Jets last year in the first round of the playoffs. Silverberg was especially terrific in that first round series. The final series of the first round, I know you're down in California and you see the Kings play quite a bit. They're back up against the San Jose Sharks, and everybody remembers the 3-0 comeback a couple of years ago. I think some people forget how dominant San Jose was in the early part of that series and how it really did change the entire complexion of the series, just changed with the snap of a finger almost. What do you think, you know, looking at the series, and I think San Jose plays fundamentally sound hockey. I know they can be aggressive and on the forecheck at times. I just don't see them going to the dirty areas enough to be able to kind of penetrate that LA Kings team that plays so well as a five-man unit. How do you see the series turning out?
Yeah, well, to me, the X factor in the series is the fact that the Kings missed the playoffs last year and are far better rested. I mean, I've brought this up with Drew Doughty a couple times in our conversations, and he said it's a legitimate thing, you know, that they were running on fumes at the end of last season, and they just weren't able to, you know, to make the push that they needed in the final couple of weeks to get themselves into the playoffs. So they had the long summer. They came back rededicated to winning again, and you can see it. When you're in that dressing room, you know, you can see the conviction of Doughty, of Muzzin, of Kopitar, of Carter, and especially of Jonathan Quick. I mean, you know, Quick, to me, is the Western Conference answer to Braden Holtby. You know, I cast around and look at all the other teams with their goaltending issues, and then you go to Los Angeles, and you've got an ultra-competitive guy who really bears down well when the game is on the line and doesn't give up a lot of cheap goals when it matters the most. And that, to me, is the biggest edge there. You know, in fact, is San Jose going to start Jones, or are they going to start Reimer? You know, are they going to start Jones, and is there the possibility of a quick hook? I mean, James Reimer has been very good for the Sharks since he's come over there, and anybody that watched Toronto during the period of time knows that when this guy, you know, gets in that one of those, you know, 2-week stretches where he's, you know, lights out great, you know, that might swing a series in the team's favor. I love the way Joe Thornton played this year, by the way. And I think that, you know, San Jose was also renewed by the fact that they missed the playoffs. They had the coaching change there. So I think we're going to see great hockey in that series. I just have a hard time betting against Los Angeles' playoff pedigree. You know, I see how motivated they are to get back in the winning circle. I think they know that the window is, you know, probably closing in the next couple of years. You know, they probably can't re-sign Milan Lucic. They've got Toffoli and Pearson one more year on these bridge contracts, and then they're going to have to pay them. So it will all blow up for salary cap reasons in the next couple of years in Los Angeles. So the players in the dressing room understand the urgency. If they're going to win championships, it's going to have to be this year or next year, and I see a really motivated, dedicated group there.
Joined by Eric DeHatchick. Eric, you had a great roundtable in the Globe and Mail this past Saturday. Before I ask you about your prediction, we know who you're going to pick for the Cup, so your Western Conference team. The question you asked, I think it was to Ray Ferraro, in terms of the style of play, and you just talked about the LA Kings, and you spoke earlier about the Chicago Blackhawks. How interesting is it to you that two teams can be so dominant playing such different styles over the past 5 years?
Yeah, to me, that was really the most important thing, because I've covered hockey for almost 40 years, and for as long as I've been doing it, there has been a copycat element of it. So in the 1980s, when the Edmonton Oilers were winning by scoring 400 goals a year, other teams thought, okay, we've got to, you know, we want to try and play run and gun, and that was the highest scoring era in the National Hockey League, and you had crazy 8, 9, 6 scores. And then when the New Jersey Devils started to you know, win with that smothering defensive approach, you know, for about 10 years, that was the style of hockey that was played in the National Hockey League. So this has been something that has been really consistent throughout the, you know, the era that I've covered, at any rate. So now you've got this unique situation where you have two teams. You know, Los Angeles is one of those hard, heavy, physical teams, and Chicago, a skating, quick strike team, and they alternate championships. So if you're trying to copy, you know, you don't. There's two completely separate blueprints or templates, and both of them have been proven to work. So Ray's point, and I think it's a good one, is that, you know, you just have to look at your own personnel, and, you know, if you have, you know, players that can play a skating game, then that's the style you have to play, you know, and then force other teams to match the way that you play, rather than, you know, saying, okay, this style wins, therefore we're going to have to build a team that allows us to play this style. And it's the, you know, chicken and egg argument, or cart before the horse. You know, what do you do? And I think that the smart teams, the, you know, the ones that are forward thinking, decide, okay, you know, we've drafted these players, or these are the ones that have, you know, matured as they came through our system, and away we go. So yeah, I love that exercise, by the way. I enjoy that roundtable discussion, especially when it's, you know, the people that were gracious enough to participate all have smart thoughts on the game. And so, yeah, it was a fun thing. I appreciate you, you know, reading it.
Very enjoyable. Final question, Eric. You mentioned earlier that off the top, you have the Washington Capitals as your cup winner. Who do you have them facing in the final?
I got Los Angeles coming out of the West. But, you know, there are so many good teams in the West, and I hate making predictions. There's a lot of, you know, my colleague Bob McKenzie just refuses to do it, and I always preface it by saying that, you know, so much depends on injuries and matchups and things like that. You know, there's an awful lot of teams that have historically, you know, been in a position where they probably should win a Stanley Cup, and they just run out of bodies at a certain point. And so, you know, that's the one thing that you can never predict. But, you know, all things being equal, if everybody stays relatively healthy, I just like what Los Angeles has, and I love what Washington has.
Eric DeHatrick of the Globe and Mail, thanks so much for joining us on the annual playoff preview show. Enjoy the playoffs, and hope to speak to you soon.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks, Eric.
Big thank you to Eric DeHatchick of the Globe and Mail for joining us. That interview was brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. When we come back, we continue our playoff previews with the Anaheim Ducks and the Nashville Predators. You're listening to NHL This Week, playoff preview show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL This Week, quarter after seven here on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Join IC on June the 5th in raising money for the Riverview Health Center's Alzheimer and Dementia Wards by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation's Cycle on Life or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca. You can send us a tweet at Illegal Curve. We'll send you all the relevant information on how to get involved in that fantastic event and go for a bike ride with Illegal Curve. The final Western Conference series, the Los Angeles Kings, number two in the Pacific Division, against the San Jose Sharks, number three in the Pacific Division. Two teams that know each other very well, of course. Both teams, of course, missed the playoffs last year. But the year before, the Kings were down to the Sharks 3-0. And they stormed back to win the series in seven games, becoming just the fourth team in NHL history to win a series after losing the first three games. From my perspective, it doesn't seem like anybody's really giving the Sharks much of a chance in this series, but is that sort of giving the Sharks short shrift after they've had a very solid year in getting back to the Stanley Cup playoffs?
I think, Drew, part of that has to do with the fact that the San Jose Sharks blew that lead, as you mentioned, 2 years ago, and it has to do with the fact that the San Jose Sharks have never been able to get over that hump, and for the fact that the LA Kings have won two Stanley Cups in recent memory. So that's more so why they're the underdog, in addition to being below them in the standings. But I like the Sharks in this series, and the reason why I like the Sharks in this series is because I think that this team all year has had something to prove. They're very well coached. It's a very evenly matched series. If you look at all of the numbers, and LA is a better possession team, but San Jose is also a top 10 possession team if you look at Team Corsi. But if you look at offensive numbers, San Jose scored more goals this year. LA allowed less goals. San Jose's got the better power play. LA's got the better penalty kill, so it's kind of a wash there, right?
Neither penalty kill is especially good. The Kings were 15th at 81.4%. The Sharks were 20th at 80.5%.
And why I give San Jose the advantage here is because I think their offense is going to give that LA Kings defense a lot of troubles. And you could look at it the other way, and you could say that the Kings are going to outscore the San Jose Sharks. And ultimately, I think this series is going to come down to San Jose's depth against LA. And you know, a couple of years ago when LA won the Cup, they had Slava Voynov, they had Robin Regier, they had Willie Mitchell, and you replace those guys with Braden McNabb, Luke Shen, and Jamie McBain. So I don't think this Kings defense is as good as it was a couple of years ago. And you forget that the San Jose Sharks dominated the LA Kings a couple of years ago. So I think that, you know, I really like Joe Thornton this year. I think that in a year where you thought he might be traded at the beginning of the year, he's really put together a Hart Trophy season. He's had his best year in recent memory. And I think when you're talking about a guy like Patrick Marleau being your third line center, along there, Nick Spaulding has been there as of late. I think it's going to cause some matchup issues for LA. I know that some people have concern whether it's going to be Martin Jones or James Reimer. I think it's pretty clear that it's going to be Martin Jones. And I don't just mean the first game. I mean that they're going to go with Martin Jones unless he really struggles. And if he does, James Reimer has been very good since coming over from Toronto. So I think this is going to be a very even series. You're talking about two of the best offensive teams in the NHL. And when you're talking about LA, Jonathan Quick just had his career year as far as wins go, and his numbers are always good. Jonathan Quick is a top goalie in the NHL. So I there's something about San Jose this year, Drew, that I really like. Brent Burns scoring 27 goals, 75 points. He had his best year ever, and I think this defense is better than people give it credit for there with Vlasic and Justin Braun. Brendan Dillon. I just like this group, and I think they're going to steal a game on the road. San Jose, by the way, was one of the top teams on the road, and so I think it's an advantage for them to start the series on the road. So I'm going to take San Jose, and I'm going to take San Jose in six games.
A bold prediction from Ezzy.
Yeah, that is a bold prediction. I think it's an interesting prediction because you're you know, it's not your traditional underdog team in that they have that veteran, they have a veteran presence, and they have the talent. You know, usually it's that young up-and-coming squad lots of times that will become the upset pick. So I give Ezzy credit for having the guts to make that pick. I don't think San Jose is going to win. Maybe it wouldn't shock me as much as some other teams. But one thing that, you know, to Ezzy's point, to get on that for a second, I like San Jose's defensive depth this year far better than it used to be.
Sure.
You know, they shored up with Dillon and Polak, so you have an aggressive group. You're able to add Paul Martin, who I've never really been a fan of, but he's a productive, useful player. Brent Burns, as he mentions, has had a good year, and obviously Vlasic and Braun. I think that's a far improved defense that leaves them with better matchup capabilities than they've had in the past. And I think Peter DeBoer is an underrated coach. I've said that before on the show. He's able to build structure in his team with his teams, and you know, he's taken that Devils team to the Cup final a couple of years ago. So he's, to me, I regard him. I hold him in high regard. That being said, you're playing against an LA team. I don't even love LA's defense. I like LA's goaltending a lot better than I like San Jose's goaltending. I like LA's forwards and their ability to compete in the dirty areas better than I do San Jose. I think San Jose plays on the perimeter too much. And I think against LA, they play so cohesive. And if you watch the Jets, you know, against LA, you watch LA against other teams, it's so hard to get into the middle. They're so big and strong and they're so structured. I think San Jose is going to have an issue with that. And that's the main reason why, and goaltending is probably the other one, why I have LA winning the series in six games.
I should mention that Mark-Edward Vlasic will be back in the Sharks lineup, as he had missed the last few games or last week or so of games. So Vlasic will be back in the lineup. So will Matt Nieto. He'll also return to the Sharks lineup. No sign of Marian Gaborik for the Los Angeles Kings, as we've mentioned. Do you have concerns about the Kings' scoring depth without Gaborik in that lineup? You know, their bottom six, you know, a veteran bottom six, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, it's a slower crew. Yeah, it's a question. They've never been that dominant offensive team, though, really. I mean,
sure,
for the course of the past number of years, that's not the way they're going to beat you. So, yeah, it's a concern maybe more for the long haul. But, yeah, I mean, it's that infusion of speed, and you're going to elevate pressure and the role of a guy like Tanner Pearson. But, I mean, with Kopitar and Carter and Pearson and Toffoli, and there's enough guys there who can score to win, and Doughty creating from the back end. I just don't love their back end. I don't love it. But, again, I think that's a question for longer term more so than this year. I think this series are still well-suited to win.
For a series, so you're saying that you think that could be a factor in the second round of the conference championships as opposed to necessarily this first round against the Sharks?
Yeah.
Is it to the Kings' advantage? You mentioned that you're not loving the defense, that the Sharks don't sort of grind down on defense.
That, and by that play, I mean the players' defense, not the team defense.
Yes,
sorry?
I know that the you know, you're talking about the individual defenseman matchup. That the Sharks aren't a, I mean, they're a speed team. They're not a grinding team. They're not a team that sort of makes it. They score off the rush. They don't make it. They don't make it especially difficult on the opponent's defense.
I mean, they can make plays, Drew. They can make plays and they can possess the puck. Isaac Thornton, they can, you know, they pass the puck well. I just think, yeah, it's, you know, that does that speed concern me a bit off the rush? Yeah, it does. But if they're able to, the Kings are able to contain that, and they're pretty good at that, then you're creating off the cycle, which some of San Jose's lines can do, but some of the other lines, I think, it's going to be going to get leaned on a bit, and I wonder if there's enough pushback.
A guy like Drew Doughty, you expect to see him, you know, close to 30 minutes per game in these playoffs. He plays 20 minutes a game in the regular season.
More than that.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to see him, you know, Duncan Keith-like numbers like we saw last year with the Blackhawks and everything else. He's going to be in all situations you're going to see Drew Doughty not on the ice, and you're going to be surprised by that.
Yeah, and Drew Doughty's played those type of minutes now for 5 or 6 years. I think one of the most interesting storylines is here. I think this San Jose Sharks team felt embarrassed 2 years ago when they blew that 3-0 lead, and a lot of those players are still on this team. Joe Thornton, Patrick Marleau, Logan Couture, Joe Pavelski, Brent Burns, Marc-Edward Vlasic, all of these guys, these core guys, were on that team, and I think they're going to use that as motivation in this series.
You know, it's too soon to say that it's a last kick of the can, of course, for the Los Angeles Kings, because they're not old in the tooth by any stretch. But
it might be the last kick in the can when you consider Eric Duhatchik mentioned this in his interview with Richie. Milan Lucic might not be back, and you're talking about some of the older players like Vinny LeCavalier might not be back. He's not a core guy, but you're talking about other players. Rob Scuderi, he's probably in his last year, if not second last year. So, I mean, LA is definitely wanting to go far. I mean, they're not happy that they just got into the playoffs. So I wouldn't say it's the last kick of the can, because when you're talking about Kopitar and Doughty and Jeff Carter,
and
Toffoli, Pearson, these guys are not old players. But and Jonathan Quick, you're right, Rich. He's 30 years old. So I wouldn't say if they don't go all the way this year that their window has closed. But for some of the players, like we mentioned, like LeCavalier and Lucic, they might not be around next year.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll shift our focus to the Eastern Conference matchups. You're listening to NHL This Week. It's the Illegal Curve Playoff Preview Show on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour. You're listening to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club and Clear Lake Golf Course. Become a member of Bell Acres Golf and Country Club and you'll receive the same playing privileges at Clear Lake Golf Course, located in beautiful Riding Mountain National Park. Find out more at bellacres.com and follow them on Twitter at bellacres. Gentlemen, we shift our focus to the NHL's Eastern Conference, where the best team in the league all season long, the Washington Capitals, will do battle with the number 8 seed Philadelphia Flyers. Caps going 2-0-2 this season against the Flyers. Two of the Flyers' wins coming in overtime against them. How is this matchup for the Washington Capitals? Are they matchup proof given how dominant they've been all season long? You know, is it any matchup? Second in goals per game, third in goals against, fourth in power play, fourth in penalty kill. Do the Washington Capitals care who they play in the first round?
I think they care who they play in the first round. You don't want to, you know, there's certain teams that you would like to avoid, Drew. Philadelphia Flyers, I don't think, are one of them. I mean, Philadelphia Flyers have looked really good if you look at the numbers over the past, 40 games or so.
Mm-hmm. They went on a huge run. They're this year's Ottawa Senators, if you will.
Yeah,
you
know, there are some similarities there. The Washington Capitals, though, have great depth, and they have depth at all positions, and not only do they have depth at all positions, but they can beat you in different ways. You know, they're not all offensively inclined on the back end, and they're not all just finesse guys up front. They play physical. They can play skill. They have a seasoned coach. They have great goaltending. I mean, they're my Stanley Cup pick at the beginning of the season. They're my Stanley Cup pick now. I don't see them. I would be surprised if they lost. In terms of the Philadelphia Flyers, it's been an impressive run. I've been especially impressed with the run the Flyers have put together, taking into account the fact that I don't really believe their defense is very good. I mean, I think their defense will be, by all accounts, excellent in 3 to 4 years. You know, with Provorov and Sanheim and Gostisbehere developing.
Yeah, guys who aren't on the roster right now.
Sam Morin turns into something. I mean, you know, I haven't seen the guys play, but I've heard good things. Everybody's heard good things. So in the future, yeah, something, you know, they've looked to address. But right now, I don't think they can do that. They can match up. I mean, I don't think they can match up against this first or second line of Washington. I think Washington can line up far better against the Philadelphia Flyers. And I don't love the Flyers' goaltending. That's something I haven't trusted. A guy like Steve Mason, is not somebody that I trust in the big situation. The Flyers forwards are good. There's some good players there, and Haxel's done a really nice job. But I think I have Washington in five.
Yeah, it's tough to not go with the Washington Capitals, Richie. When you talk about the Washington Capitals, you're talking about the best team in the NHL, right? And it's a nice story, and you know, obviously the condolences to Ed Snyder and the family, pardon me, of Ed Snyder. I think they're going to use that as motivation in the series, but it's just a terrible matchup for the Philadelphia Flyers. When you're talking about the Washington Capitals, you mentioned, you know, the matchup. So when you're talking about the Backstrom-Ovechkin line, they're going to be probably matched up against Nick Schultz and Mark Streit.
Right.
When you're talking about the Kuznetsov-Burakovsky-Williams line,
right.
They're
going to
be going up against Andrew McDonald and Shane Gostisbehere. Philadelphia certainly had a better record with Gostisbehere in the lineup. He should be a Calder Trophy finalist, and even in the third line with Jason Chimera and Marcus Johansson and Tom Wilson going up against Radko Gudas and Brandon Manning probably. So the Washington Capitals are the best team in the NHL. And the only thing that I see standing in the way of the Washington Capitals is if Steve Mason steals the series. And I think Washington is just too good. Eric Duhatchik mentioned it in his interview. Alex Ovechkin now doesn't have to do it all with the additions of Justin Williams and TJ Oshie and with Kuznetsov developing into a legitimate bona fide number two center. There's just so many weapons there. Mike Richards is your fourth line center. You know, that's been a nice story after, you know, the troubling offseason that he had. And this defense, guys, is one of the best defenses in the Eastern Conference, you know, starting at the top with Matt Niskanen and Carl Alsner, and then, you know, even a guy like Mike Weber, you know, kind of a defensive physical presence there on the third pairing. Braden Holtby ties Marty Brodeur's wins record. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're the complete package. There is no weakness on this team. So I think Steve Mason is going to have to steal this series for the Philadelphia Flyers. And again, it's been a nice story, the Philadelphia Flyers, you know, being out of the playoffs for much of the season. And I do like, you know, the depth that they have on forward. They've moved a guy like Raffel down to the third line. He was on the top line last year, if you remember, with Voracek and Giroux. And Sean Couturier finally, you know, has been given that kind of number two center role, and he's done an excellent job. Braden Schenn moving over to the wing. They do have good pieces, but Washington, I think, at the end of the day, Drew, is just going to be too much for the Flyers to handle. So I've got Washington. I think the Flyers win a couple games, though. I'm going to say Washington in six.
Is this going to be a situation like we saw last year between the Capitals and the Islanders, especially in that game seven where the ice was just tilted, you know, that the Islanders couldn't get the puck out of the zone, out of their own zone? Is that going to be the case in this series, just, you know, almost four, five, six, seven games where it's just a dominant Washington team and a Philly team that just can't defend as well enough to handle them?
Well, everyone knows how much skill, Drew, that this Capitals team has, but it's also a tough team. You're talking about guys like Chimera and Wilson on the third line, and guys like Winnick and Beagle on the fourth line, and the defense is a physical group, and Brooks Orpik is a guy that you remember how physical he was for Pittsburgh that year they won the Stanley Cup. But Alsner has a good physical element to his game. We mentioned Mike Weber, veteran guy on the third pair. It's a tough team to play against, and you know that it's tough to win games when you're always coming from behind, and that's what happens when you play this Capitals team. They seem to always play with the lead. They're a very good home team, and they're also good on the road. There aren't that many weaknesses that you can exploit. And you know, Rich mentions Dave Haxtell doing an excellent job in his rookie season in the NHL. You have to give him a lot of credit for getting this Flyers team to the playoffs after they missed the playoffs last year. But you draw the Washington Capitals in the first round, 120-point team. I just don't see an eighth seed upset here.
And you can compare the numbers all you want over the last half of the year, and the Flyers had great numbers, but the Washington Capitals had little to nothing to play for.
And the Flyers didn't play the Capitals each and every game.
Also,
you know, you play an entire series against the Capitals, I think their numbers would be dramatically different.
And again, if Philly steals the first game, and it's possible Claude Giroux and Voracek are two of the best offensive players in the game. They might have had you know, worse seasons than they had the previous year, but the dynamic of the series does change if they win that first game. But I still think that Washington has just too much depth. They really do. And I realize that, you know, the storyline would be really nice with the passing of Ed Snyder. And again, condolences to his family. But I just think that the Washington Capitals are going to be too much for them to handle.
The other Metropolitan Division matchup will see the New York Rangers and the Pittsburgh Penguins do battle. Marc-Andre Fleury, of course, he's been out of the Penguins lineup for much of the last couple of weeks.
Might play game one, Drew.
Might play game one. Did practice again today, his second day in a row practicing for the Penguins. No sign of Evgeny Malkin as of yet. His return still unknown. Olli Maatta confident about playing in game one. He had been out of the Penguins lineup as well. We know that Ryan McDonagh has a broken bone in his hand. He'll miss at least the start of the series between the Penguins and the Rangers. How do you see that matchup taking shape between the Rangers and the Penguins? The Penguins have probably been the hottest team in the NHL over the last 30 or 40 games of the regular season.
The Penguins, Drew, are a team that, you know, you mentioned how well they've played. I think it's the way that they've played well. You know, no Malkin right now and putting together the Bonino, Kessel, and Hagelin line just caused havoc. I think Sidney Crosby playing with guys who don't need the puck that much. You know, he might play with Malkin. You've heard that speculation if and when Malkin returns, although we're not really sure when that's going to be.
Haven't heard anything about Malkin.
I've heard second round more likely. So, I mean, it's not going to be an easy task to take over the Rangers, but I guess the question goes back to matchups for the Rangers versus Pittsburgh. Who is going to defend Crosby? Because you look at the Ranger defense, mm-hmm. and are you going with Staal? You're probably going to lean on Staal to do it. I don't think you're going to trust Yandel to do it on the left side. So you're going to do Staal. Mark Staal's a solid player. I don't think he can handle that role the entire series. And I don't know if there's anybody else, another pair, that they'd really want to do that. Then you have that Bonino line. And that's one you probably want to match Yandel up against because of the mobility aspect of it. But McDonagh provides McDonagh's loss. And we're not sure how long he's out for. They're here the first couple of games, maybe even the first round, although these guys seem to have a way to get back. It changes the matchups for them. Now, Pittsburgh's defense isn't great, and they're going to have issues with the kind of New York's depth in terms of, you know, there's no one guy who's just a dominant player there. And that's why I think the series goes seven games, actually. I think it does go seven games because Fleury is still a question mark, and Lundqvist is still Lundqvist, whatever you want to say. A guy who's ultra competitive, and Vigneault is a good bench coach, and he does a nice job behind and managing those players there. I just think that Pittsburgh has gained confidence, and Crosby seems awfully motivated, and their numbers are good. Like they check out in a lot of areas. So I have Pittsburgh in seven because I think the Rangers give them a hard time with their depth, and they make Pittsburgh defend at times more than they like to, and they're not the best team at defending. But I do have the Penguins in seven.
Yeah, it's a pretty evenly matched series, isn't it? When you talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins, you're talking about a team that it looked like they might miss the playoffs mm-hmm. a couple of months ago. And, mm-hmm. you know, when Mike Sullivan comes in, all of a sudden they're a new team, really. It was really the rebirth of Sidney Crosby, and he deserves a lot of credit because he started off the season poorly, and I don't think Mike Johnston knew what he was doing with this team. And I think Mike Sullivan came in, and he played to his strengths, and he knows that the strength of this team is offense and opening the game up. And Chris Letang had one of his best years in recent memory with all of the injuries he's had. And Pittsburgh can just hurt you from so many different angles, really. And they are bottom-heavy, and they're going to miss Evgeny Malkin. But the New York Rangers, and I know the advanced stats guys are going to love this. The Rangers are the worst possession team of all the mm-hmm. playoff teams, and the Pittsburgh Penguins are actually a pretty solid possession team. Not one of the best, but top 10. And when you talk about Sidney Crosby and Chris Kunitz, they've kind of regained their magic there. And I like, you know, bringing in a guy like Justin Schultz. He makes that third pairing a little bit speedier. And, you know, Maatta, he might miss a couple of games. Marc-Andre Fleury's health, to me, is the big question mark. If Marc-Andre Fleury comes in and he looks a little bit shaky, then I have some mm-hmm. concerns in the series. But Fleury had an excellent regular season, mm-hmm. and it looks like, based on today's practice, that he could be ready to go for game one. So, again, I think these two teams are very evenly matched, and I'm going to have to give the edge to Pittsburgh. I'll take Pittsburgh in seven as well.
Pittsburgh in seven for both of you, gentlemen. Do you put any stock in, you know, Mike Sullivan being especially familiar with this Rangers team, given his history there as an assistant coach when John Tortorella was the Rangers head coach?
Yeah, it probably helps, but I mean, these teams met in the first round last year, Drew, so I'm pretty sure that the Rangers coaching staff knows an awful lot about the Pittsburgh Penguins as well.
Sure. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll do our final two series looking at the Atlantic Division. You're listening to NHL This Week. It's the Illegal Curve Playoff Preview Special on TSN 1290. final segment of NHL this week for this Tuesday evening. Final segment until October as we drop down to, of course, the one show, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturdays, 9 a.m. here on TSN 1290. Now that the Winnipeg Jets season has come to an end, this segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Marlon Wayans arrives in Winnipeg at Rumors this coming Thursday. A few tickets have been released for sale, so if you missed out on your opportunity to buy Marlon Wayans tickets, some more tickets have been made available. Check them out, RumorsComedyClub.com. Do it right now before it's too late. Gentlemen, we continue our playoff preview by looking at the Atlantic Division. The Florida Panthers in the number one seed in the Atlantic Division. They get the New York Islanders as the top wild card spot. This is a Florida Panthers team that has been exceeded expectations all year long, going up against the New York Islanders team that has been hit by the injury bug, as both Yaroslav Halak and Anders Lee are out of the Islanders lineup. Travis Hamonic has been injured, but is working hard to get back in time for Game 1. I've heard a lot that, you know, this is a possibility that people wouldn't be surprised to see the Islanders knock off the Panthers here. I'm not seeing that. I don't know why it is. I don't know why the Panthers aren't getting as much respect as I think they deserve throughout the NHL for how terrific their regular season was.
This series, to me, is a complete toss-up. And then these teams are, I'm not going to say entirely similar. They really, you know, aren't. Eric Datch was on earlier. He talked about goaltending being a big discrepancy there at Grice against Luongo. So they're different, but they kind of get to the same spot in different ways. And so I think they're it's a 50-50 series. Now you look at it deeper, the Islanders are going to have to be able to defend against Barkov's line. That's something they're probably able to do. The next question is, without Hamonic, or now he skated this morning and he may play, can they defend well enough on the second pairing against the Panthers' second line? Now, I don't think people are giving enough attention to the fact that Vincent Trocheck appears to be out for the first few games of the series, because Nick Bjugstad in that spot is a good player. He doesn't create for his teammates as well as Trocheck does. I think that's going to be a concern. Now, without Trocheck, they're going to have to rely on Bjugstad and Smith, and Smith's had a good year. Bjugstad's come on a bit lately to play against, you know, guys like DeHaan, who I think is a solid defenseman. Ryan Pulock going to be a guy who they're going to have to rely on a bit more, you'd expect. He can move the puck real well, and he can shoot it, but it's going to be defensively. So I wonder both ways here, you know, are the Panthers probably defense is better able to handle the depth of the Islanders then vice versa. But if you have Hamonic there, that changes things. And without Trocheck, that changes things. The goaltending is huge. That's why I think it's Islanders in seven games is what I have.
The Islanders? I
have the Islanders in seven. I think Tavares against Ekblad is going to be a dynamic matchup. You're going to see a lot of that. The Islanders' secondary players who are skilled need to step up and turn it on. I do like the coaching in Florida better than I do on the island. But the Panthers are coming in they're relying on a lot of young players, and if they don't win, I think there's still a ton of building blocks there. The Islanders, if they don't win, I think Capuano probably gets fired. So you wonder if there's a little bit of a rallying cry there with the Islanders. I think that another thing to watch for is that fourth line discrepancy. Florida's not as deep as you might think with some of those injuries. So I think the Islanders' depth offensively will be able to take advantage of the Florida depth offensively.
I picked the Islanders in this series as well. And when you think about it, it's not really that much of an upset when there are only 7 points separating the two teams. And I think the Florida Panthers, Drew, have had a great season. I think Gerard Gallant deserves a lot of credit for the job that he's done after missing the playoffs last year, and especially with this young team. I mean, when you're talking about that top line of the Florida Panthers, you're talking about arguably a top five first line in the NHL, Huberdeau, Barkov, and Jágr, and then Richie mentions Nick Bjugstad has been centering Jussi Jokinen and Riley Smith. Vincent Trocheck was up on that second line when he wasn't playing on the third line, and that affects their depth because then you've got potentially Rocco Grimaldi centering Yuri Hudler and Teddy Purcell, and
that's when
the depth falls off. You know, Yuri Hudler hasn't had a very good year, Teddy Purcell as well, but when you're talking about the Florida Panthers, it all starts in goal with Roberto Luongo. He's had an excellent season at 37 years old, but you forget, John Tavares has had a bit of a down year for him, but John Tavares is still a top center in the NHL, and he might have only had 72 points this year. But I think, to Richie's point, I think that line, Nielsen, Tavares, and Okposo, isn't that far of a drop-off from Florida's top line. And then when you talk about, you know, going down the list here, Ryan Strom had a bit of a down year. Brock Nelson had a bit of a down year. And I like that Florida has addressed some of their depth issues. And you're going to talk about, a pretty evenly matched series. You're going to see a lot of one-goal games, I think. I'm taking the Islanders in seven, and I'm not very confident in that pick because Florida has surprised me. I certainly didn't even pick them to make the playoffs. So I've got Islanders in seven. I think it's going to be a fantastic series. I think another point here, Nick Leddy has quietly had a career year, and even if Travis Hamonic can't play in game one, which it looks like he might, Leddy and Boychuk is a fantastic first pair, and I think Calvin DeHaan has had a really good year in his fourth year in the NHL. Ryan Pollock is another guy, rookie defenseman on that third pair, somebody to look at. And finally, looking at the goaltending, a lot of people have pointed out Thomas Greiss. Look at Thomas Greiss's save percentage. It's top five in the NHL, and it might have fallen off, Drew, towards the end of the season, as you pointed out during the commercial break, but he's still a very good goaltender. He was a backup for years in San Jose, and I don't know that's necessarily going to be their Achilles heel. I think they're going to score enough goals to win this series. And again, it's going to be a close one, though. I don't feel that confident. I could easily see Florida winning this one, too.
You know, I'm surprised that you both took the Islanders, to be perfectly honest.
That's not the consensus. I think Florida's the favorite here by a little bit. Yeah. I think it's a complete toss-up series, but I think Florida's probably the paper favorite a little bit here.
The paper favorite is Florida. I mean, I think the Roberto Luongo versus Thomas Greiss is a mismatch.
It is. I mean, Luongo's a better player, Drew.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a question about that.
Right. And so, and then you look at the forward group, and I think that, sure, Tavares is the best player probably of all the forwards, but I think I like Florida's forwards a little bit better than I do the Islanders when you take it all encompassing. And the defense, who knows what Travis Hamonic, what shape he's going to be in. The Panthers are going to get Eric Gudbrandsson back. He's been out of the lineup with concussion-like symptoms. Maybe I'm just biased. I'm biased because I took the Panthers in the hockey pool, a lot of them, but I think the Panthers are going to be able to handle the Islanders.
I mean, it's possible the Panthers make it to the conference finals.
Huh?
I can certainly see it.
Well, let's transition quickly into the final playoff series. That is the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Detroit Red Wings. The Red Wings, sneak in the last couple days of the season, winning on that Saturday to get into the playoffs, coupled with the Boston Bruins, not performing very well down the stretch. And then the Tampa Bay Lightning, last year's Eastern Conference representative, just riddled with injuries with Anton Strahlman and Steven Stamkos out of the lineup. Sounds like Callahan, Kucherov, and Hedman are all going to be back in the lineup in time for Game 1. Tyler Johnson practiced on Tuesday, but his status isn't yet officially known. How do you see the Lightning and the Red Wings playing out, particularly with Tampa's significant injury problems?
I don't really think either of these teams are particularly good as they are. I mean, you have obviously the Strahlman injury, the Stamkos injury. Johnson banged up. It appears he's going to play. Drew, you spoke about that. Bishop's had a very quietly tremendous year. And I don't love Detroit. If Tampa's healthy, I'm taking Tampa. But with those two injuries and, Datsyuk now, does this serve as motivation, him possibly kind of leaving the NHL?
Mm-hmm.
You look at their forward lines, they still have a lot of talent, and this is the kind of team that they're well-suited to play against. Not a really physical team, a team that kind of plays their style. I think these teams are fairly even. I don't like Detroit's back end, really, but Tampa's got the injury to Strom, and I don't love their back end either after a guy like Hedman. And Bishop has had the better year than Detroit net mining, but I like Detroit's offense now with those injuries more than I like Tampa's offense. So I have Detroit in seven games here. This is not one that I feel especially confident in, though. I think if Tampa played as their current roster, if their roster was as it is right now, I don't think their numbers would be as good as they were for the course of the season. And so that's why I think it very much is a toss-up. And there's been a lot of distractions in Tampa.
Sure.
And you wonder how much of a factor that is with the season winding down here.
It has been a long season in Tampa
sure
Bay.
Has, yeah.
You know, it's the Stamkos, will he, won't he sign? Will they trade him, whatever. They resolve that. Then Jonathan Drouin comes up. Now you've got the injuries. It seems like it's been longer than an 82-game season for the Tampa Bay Lightning.
And, you know, they played a lot last year, of course.
Sure. I mean,
but at the same time, this corner of the bracket there, I don't think any team is especially great. And I think when you look at that, any of these four teams could make it through. And if Tampa were to squeeze their way through and possibly get one or two of those guys back, it could change the look.
It changes the entire dynamic. Yeah. What about you, Ez? What do you think about the Lightning and the Red Wings as they get underway this week for their first round matchup?
Well, it's a very close series, Drew. And you mentioned that they played last year, and it was a seven-game series last year, and I mm-hmm. think it's going to go seven games. I like Detroit in this series, and I think Pavel Datsyuk, it's uncertain if this will be his last year in the NHL. But I think when you talk about these two teams, they're both good possession teams. Tampa Bay, their big weakness this year was their power play. It was bottom five in the NHL. I think when you talk about Anton Stroman and Steven Stamkos, those were two key pieces that were key pieces in the team that went to the Stanley Cup final last year. So I think those injuries are going to be too hard to overcome.
Yeah, you look at the Tampa Bay Lightning, and without Stamkos in the lineup, I mean, Nikita Kucherov was their best offensive player this year with 66 points. I don't think people are talking about just how poor of a season Tyler Johnson really had.
He didn't have a good year.
I mean, he missed a couple games with injury. He played 69 games, but 38 points for Tyler Johnson is that's an atrocious year given what he had done the season before and what he had done in the playoffs.
Well, expectations are a funny thing too, right? I mean, you're a smaller guy, you play a long season, you're expected to do some things that you did the season prior.
Sure.
It's different ballgame teams game plan for you more than they did before.
That's it for the Illegal Curve Playoff Preview Show. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Bernstein's Deli, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Riverview Health Center Foundation, Cycle on Life, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres and Clear Lake Golf Course. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Chris doing a great job behind the board, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.